more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world's changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up. The world is in their hands. When you teach the children to jump the very best you can. The world won't get no better if we just let it be.
And good morning, good morning, good morning. This is your host, Dr. Terry Mason, the doctor in the house. And it's always heard right here on AM 1690 WVON, and it's been doing so for the last 31 years. So grateful to have you with us, and we've got a great show. This is our first Sunday of the month, and as you know, on my show on first Sunday of the month, we have as our special guest, the University of Illinois Cancer Center. And joining me this morning is, I want to say this right, Juana?
It's Gianna Calixto.
Calixto. All right. And she is the director of the Community Health and Engagement Management. And there's a program that you've got going on that you want to tell us about, particularly as we're talking about breast cancer and everything else. So why don't you tell us a little about this Equal Hope. What is Equal Hope?
Yes. Hi. Thank you so much for having me this morning. Once again, my name is Gianna Calixto. I'm the Director of Community Health and Engagement with Equal Hope. And Equal Hope is a nonprofit organization. We were established back in 2008, formerly known as the Metropolitan Chicago Breast Cancer Task Force. Changed our name a few years ago to Equal Hope. And essentially, our mission is really to save lives by eliminating health inequities. We do that through like research, quality assessments and improvements, advocacy, patient navigation, which is kind of my realm. I actually oversee all of our community health workers, outreach team, and our navigation team. And we essentially are providing free breast and cervical cancer screenings, placements to medical homes, which is connecting people to a primary care doctor, as well as addressing social determinants of health. For example, we can order transportation for someone to get to their mammogram screening. And that is all of Equal Hope for the most part. We are really excited to just be on the show, share what we have going on. And we started this work because we noticed that there is these racial inequities going on specifically related to breast cancer, and through the diligent work that we've been doing in terms of quality assessments and policy and advocacy, as well as navigation, we're reducing those disparities that we're seeing.
I'm an old guy, so I remember when Dr. Ansel and a bunch of folks at Rush and other folks at the University of Illinois were looking at this question of the difference between Black and other women in terms of breast cancer, just even diagnosis, screening, things of that nature. So this then sort of stands on those shoulders. Is that correct?
That is correct. There was back in like 2005 to 2007, they were noticing that Black women were dying at a rate 62% higher than white women. And they were diagnosed, even though they were diagnosed less often. So if we're seeing higher mortality rates amongst Black women in comparison, yet they're having a lower morbidity rate, not being diagnosed as frequently, then there's something a little bit more going on there. It's not just biological differences, but there is some structural racism involved. And it was our duty to figure out what that is and how can we address it so that we ensure that there is equitable health care, right, for all.
So for the benefit of our guests, I know you and I and other docs, we always talk shop. So, but I want to make sure that the guests, our listeners, understand when we talk about morbidity and mortality.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk just a bit about morbidity and mortality, and what does that have to do with early detection?
Yes. Yeah, so when you're talking about morbidity, you're talking about the rate in which you're being diagnosed. So if Black women were being diagnosed less often than white women, yet when we're talking about mortality, it's the frequency of the rates of them passing away and dying. And so although they were being diagnosed less often, they were dying at that higher rate.
So even though they weren't as many Black women being diagnosed, the ones that were dying at a higher rate than everyone else? Is that the point?
At a higher rate. And a lot of that has to do with, as you mentioned, talking about early detection and the importance of a mammogram. And a mammogram essentially is a tool that's used, like a low-dose X-ray tool screening device that is examining the human breast, checking and viewing if there is any form of cancers. So it's used for diagnoses and screenings. The goal is really early detection. The sooner we can get women in for a mammogram, the earlier we can detect if something is going on. And so you want to really encourage individuals to get their mammogram screenings as early as possible, right now starting at 40 on an annual basis, so that they can check and see if there's anything else going on. Because I believe some people might think, you know, even I did back in the day, maybe breast cancer is just a form of lump, but that's not true. There can be maybe discharge or pain, or you might not even have any true symptoms. So a mammogram is really, really important for that early detection so that we can prevent the higher mortality rates, as we were discussing, higher rates of those passing away, so that we can treat it earlier.
So the issue around, the real issue is that if we find it early, or if it's found earlier, then you have a better opportunity for you to get treatment that might be life-saving, as opposed to finding it later when there is a bump or a lump. I think that one of the things we have to do, and actually the medical profession has to take some responsibility mm-hmm. for this, but for a long time before we did early screening or we had screening tools, we used to tell people about signs or symptoms, and we used to say they were early, but they're really not. These signs or symptoms, waiting till you get a lump or what have you, is that's not what we teach anymore. Is that right?
That is correct. You know, everyone's breast cancer is really not the same. And so when you're thinking of signs and symptoms, there can be just a variety. It can be breast pain, discharge, the lump itself, or no symptoms. So really trying to get individuals to come in and get that screening, because that would be the most effective tool to kind of examine what is really going on with a woman's breast.
So we talked just a little bit, what about these myths? What are the common myths that, if there are any, that still exist today about breast cancer and mammograms and things of that nature?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is something we've been seeing, unfortunately, a little bit more often. There's that myth that breast cancer only comes later in women, stages of their life, or older women, but we're actually seeing younger women being diagnosed with breast cancer. So it is very critical to start those screenings, you know, recommended currently starting at the age of 40 for average risk, as well as men can also get breast cancer. It's not as often. I want to say about 1 in 1,000 are diagnosed, but men can have a later stage of form of breast cancer. And I mentioned it before, not everyone's breast cancer is the same. It doesn't look the same for every woman. And so when someone is diagnosed with breast cancer, really exploring these options of treatment, because treatment can be very different in their journey for every individual. It's not always in the form of a lump. I believe there is that myth that if women wear wire bras or deodorant, it's associated with higher risk of breast cancer, but that hasn't been found to be necessarily accurate. And just because some women have an extremely healthy diet and into fitness and doing everything they can to just maintain their holistic well-being, it is still possible that they can potentially get breast cancer. So it is very critical that we start with early detection and mammogram screenings.
What's the most common myth that you see or hear about breast cancer, from men or from women?
I would say that the myth that you can only get breast cancer if it's been in your family, and that might not always be true. You know, some people might think, well, my mom or my sister, no one in my family has ever had breast cancer. I'm not too concerned to get a mammogram screening. But it is possible that, you know, unfortunately, it is possible that someone might have breast cancer, even though it was historically not in their family. Yes, those who have a woman in their family who have had breast cancer might be at a higher risk of getting breast cancer, but even those who do not have it in their family should still get those screenings.
How does what a woman eats impact her breast cancer if she has it, or is it possible to help, food can help prevent or assist in preventing breast cancer?
Oh, we are what we eat. I truly, truly believe in that. And it is recommended that you have a diet rich in vegetables, rich in fruits, less red meat, less alcohol in your diet to really assist with that, as well as just being physically active, lowering the fat that is in your body, because that can be associated with, you know, fats and estrogen levels, which can basically have a role with breast cancer. So it is recommended just thinking about foods rich in fruits and vegetables.
All right. And did you say, because I want to make sure people, because you put it all together, you said less red meat, right?
I did.
Right. I just want to make sure that people are listening, because it all went together. I want to make sure there's no ambiguity. No, we are not advocating that you go out and eat steaks. We're saying just the opposite. So we want you to know that these meats can create issues around breast cancer. And the question is, when should a woman start even having a mammogram? And does it matter whether or not she had a mom, a sister, or aunt, or grandmother that had breast cancer, whether she should start earlier or not?
So the average risk for women, if you have average risk, then you should be starting at age 40. At 40, begin to get those mammograms every year. And there is something called a risk assessment that can be done with providers. There's multiple tools of risk assessment. Basically asking questions such as hereditary questions, if your mom or your sister has had breast cancer. And then there's a risk score that is created. If that risk score is over like a 20%, you're talking about potentially getting a type of screening earlier, such as a breast MRI, really talking to your doctor and figuring out what would be best depending on your risk for breast cancer. So once again, it's not different. It's not the same for every woman. It can be different, but having those discussions with your primary care provider is critical to identify, A, what is your risk? If it's average risk, then, you know, starting at the age of 40. If you might have a higher risk of breast cancer, maybe looking into starting a screening sooner.
This is a wonderful show, and if you've got questions, we want you to ask your questions now, so that we can get them in before the end of the show. I always I just don't like it when every show we got a great topic going on, we get a flood of calls and they come in at the end of the show. So I want them to come in now so we can answer them so that you can have your question answered right here on the air. The number for you to call is 773-591-1690. That's 773-591-1690. We want you to really dial in and ask your questions. There are no bad or irrelevant questions. We want you to make sure that we get you get your question answered. All right, Jay, you're on the line with your question. Go right ahead. Hello?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Go right ahead, sir.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I heard that when a woman breastfeeds her children, she's less likely to get breast cancer. Is that true?
That's a great question. Go right ahead. She's going to give you an answer now.
That is a great question. And I have to definitely look into that to get back to you, because there can be misconceptions about that, and we want to get some clarity. So I will get back to you, and if it's okay, I can let Dr. Brown know and can share that on the show next time.
Okay, thanks for taking my call.
You're so welcome. We'll take any call that you have. Now, that's a great question. I'm really glad you asked, because I had heard similar things about that particular question. But I want to go back, because I remember conversations. This really started because there were some doctors that were very interested, even just looking at the fact that Black women weren't even coming in to get mammograms at the same rate as their white counterparts. Mm-hmm. And there was a major push, if I recall, I think with Dr. Ansel's wife and some other folks, to really increase that. Is that the genesis that we're talking about here? That's how that started, I believe.
That is how Equal Hope started. So we have a strong group of community health workers and patient navigators who are essentially boots on the ground going into our communities, particularly Black and Brown communities, really trying to get individuals to know about the importance of breast health, about getting a mammogram, and then signing up for those services. So Equal Hope is a lead agency for the Illinois Breast and Cervical Cancer Program. What that means is for women who don't have insurance, or they have to pay a really high deductible rate, underinsured, our program can help pay for the screenings, free mammograms for individuals who want to sign up for our program. What's exciting is that we're now connected with UIC, a cancer center. We have a Hope Leaders program in which two community organizations are partnered with two cancer biology research programs. So Equal Hope is working with Dr. Ekra Emra, and we're kind of understanding what is it that they're researching, and then we share what we see in the community, and how can we combine the two? How can we develop better relationships between research and community, and how can we share that with our community so that we start increasing trust in the research that is being conducted currently and any treatments that are derived from that research. So really excited about the program to be paired with this group and really understand what is it that they're researching, what other types of treatments are they trying to identify if possible, and then how can we share our experience in the community with researchers?
Well, that's a great question. Has there been any, I know we talked about less red meat or what have you. We talked about the things that, and you talked about fruits and vegetables. Are there other things, and is your organization involved at all in both for those people who have difficulty getting those things, to work with them to identify opportunities where they might be able to get those things?
So Equal Hope is a very connected. We have lots of wonderful community partners that we work with. Our navigators are essentially case managers. They talk to everyone in our program in depth and really identify what might be needed in their situation. And if it's access to food or access to potentially housing or just other concerns that maybe child care or utilities, we will work with our community partners to get them the appropriate referrals that they need, because there are organizations out there that are assisting with all of these other topics to help out, such as the food access. I know Unite for Her works directly with cancer individuals, women who were diagnosed with cancer, and they have like a food stipend and assist with sending like a nice care package to individuals' homes. So we work with other organizations like that to assist directly. Equal Hope will provide transportation to for someone to go get their breast mammogram screening.
Well, this is a wonderful program, and I remember very vividly these inequities that were present just in access. So it's really an access not just to any mammogram, but really state-of-the-art mammograms, which are available today. If you got questions, we want to make sure we get them answered while we're on the air. Tell them the number to call is 773-591-1690. That's 773-591-1690. So we want you to call, because we don't like you to wait to the near the end of the show, and we don't have any time, and we run out of the opportunity to be able to explain something to you. That you may really need, and we want to get that information. So, again, give us a call here at 773-591-1690. Let me ask a question. At what age do women or is there an age that women should stop getting mammograms, or do they get them for their entire life?
So our program typically stops mammograms at the age of 64, and that's, you know, you're having a normal result after that time, but it is recommended to touch base with your doctor if they want a continued mammogram to see what that looks like and why. But our program is typically, it ends at 64, and then there will be requirements to request just different approvals if after that age.
Okay, so, but if a woman should feel something in her breast and she's 65, what should she do?
Oh, yes, definitely come and talk to your provider and get a referral for a mammogram screening. So at age 65, there can be other forms of payment, even if our program cannot cover it, such as Medicare. And so I would still recommend getting that mammogram.
Okay, because that's so important. And what age should young moms be concerned about their daughters getting mammograms?
It's recommended that the age starts at 40 to begin getting a mammogram. And if there's higher risk for women, and if they're having any symptoms, if you're noticing changes in your breast, such as redness or scaliness, maybe discharge other than breast milk, anything like skin irritation, we recommend that women know their breasts, know what their normal might feel like. And if it's outside of that normal, talking to your doctor to get a potential referral for a breast screening.
And what about things like cigarette smoking? Do these things, does something like cigarette smoking increase or have any impact on breast cancer?
Yeah, cigarette smoking and tobacco use has been found and linked to multiple types of cancer. So that is something to think about. We like to do, we can refer into tobacco cessation programs just to aid in reducing the risk of breast cancer.
Again, the number, we want you to call in and get your questions answered. That number again, 773-591-1690. That's 773-591-1690. Please call in now. Because if you call in toward the end of the show, I know I won't be able to get you on the air, and I want you to get your question answered while we have the experts here on the phone. Again, the number 773-591-1690. We want you to really, really get call in and let us know if you're about your concern around breast cancer. And we want you to, if you, your mom, your brother, your sisters, you know, and by the way, the gentleman that was mentioned earlier that had breast cancer, I think it was Shaft, Richard Roundtree. So he was the man that made breast cancer among men something that now we talk about because he had it. So it's very interesting, very, very, very interesting about that. So go right ahead.
And Dr. Mason, and I wanted to jump back to the gentleman's previous question because we're on the radio, so I'm able to multitask here. But it is found that breastfeeding can reduce the risk of breast cancer, showing
that
4.3%.
Did you say reduce?
Yes.
Did you say reduce?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Can lower the risk. It looks like for about 4.3% for every 12 months of breastfeeding, breast cancer is reduced.
So why don't you restate his question and restate the answer?
Yes, I believe the gentleman's question is it true that breastfeeding can reduce the risk of breast cancer? And that is true. There are some studies being found that breast cancer can be reduced from breastfeeding.
So that's a wonderful thing. You know, I'm when I was in public health working as a commissioner for the Department of Public Health and working as a CEO for the Chicago County Department of Public Health, we had major campaigns to get women to breastfeed. Our breastfeeding rates are not anywhere where they need to be, and we do need to have more women breastfeeding. So I'm delighted to hear that because I think that was one of the things that we used to say back in those days, that women who breastfed had a lower incidence of getting breast cancer than those who did not. Now, obviously, you never had any children to breastfeed. That's another issue. But if you do, breastfeeding is a major, major better opportunity to improve the health of your child and yourself. And breastfeeding gives that child the absolute perfectly genetically made milk for the baby. And that's mother's milk. So that's really, really very, very important. Let's give out the number again for people who are interested and would like to maybe call to get more information, or maybe they want to call and schedule a mammogram. What number should they call?
That number is 312-942-3368. Once again, 312-942-3368. You can also find us online. We're at equalhope.org. That's equalhope.org. And there is a link on our website if someone's interested in signing up for services or just getting connected with a navigator, whether you're younger than 40, older than 64, doesn't matter because our navigators are trained to direct individuals to the right direction and get them connected to a mammogram screening if needed. So there is a way to sign up online, or you can just simply give us a call. Number again, 312-942-3368.
Let's get that number again a little slower.
Yes, 312-942-3368.
All right, Sylvia, you're on the line with your question. Go right ahead, please, Miss Sylvia.
I was calling because I'm 75 years old, and I been getting mammographs since I was 40. So when does this stop? You know, when do they stop looking for this?
Great question. Go right ahead.
Great question, and that is a conversation to have with your primary care doctor if they believe that it is necessary for you to come in on an annual basis to get your mammogram screening. It's not a bad thing. It's great. It means they just want to check on an annual basis to make sure everything is good. And so continue to go in and get those screenings annually and have those discussions with your primary care doctor.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Wonderful call. Wonderful call. Thank you so much for calling. We'll take our next caller. Go right ahead. Go right ahead. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Your guest said they stopped screening at 64. I was wondering why was that when the guidelines say 75 and or until you talk to your doctor to recommend,
yes,
upon your doctor recommendations.
This is such a great question. Thank you so much for asking. So I was saying for our program, we are an Illinois Breast and Cervical Cancer Program, and they are payer of last resort. So their typical age range is that 40 to 64. And the reason that that stopped is because usually after that, starting at 65, a woman can get on Medicare if they were uninsured.
All right.
So then Medicare can then pick up on that payment. However, if everyone may have a different Medicare plan, and not all Medicare plans might cover a mammogram screening, and if that's the case, our program can still pay for it. So once again, still feel free to reach out to a navigator because they can look into what insurance you have, if your insurance will cover the mammogram screening or not, because we want to make sure women don't have the barrier of payment. We want to ensure that this can still be covered and you feel free to go in for a mammogram screening as needed without having that burden of financial barriers.
All right. Did that answer your question, ma'am? I think so. I think we got a question. We have another caller. All right. Well, this, you know, again, this is the time to call in. This is the time to get your questions answered because it won't be long before we'll be done. We've only got maybe about 15 minutes or so left in the show. So I want to make sure that we get your questions answered. I was out at the Kroc Center yesterday at the wonderful WVON event. Those of you who missed a really, really great event. A lot of great information out there. Maria Pappas was out there helping people to get thousands of dollars worth of return money. So I would definitely say that you look in her office to make sure that there's not some senior monies that are available to you or anything like that. And of course, we had all kinds of other information out there. Now, you talked about having dietitians. What are they recommending, and to whom are they recommending different foods too? And I know we talked about sort of trying to stay away from certain foods, but increasing in others. So let's talk a bit about that for a second, if you will.
Sure. So when you're thinking about just going back to food, having that understanding that high fat diets can lead to like being overweight or obese, which can increase the risk of breast cancer. It's just a factor. And so when we're thinking about having rich diets and fruits and vegetables, also like that Mediterranean diet pattern kind of lowers the risk, consumption of like just non-starchy vegetables. So really thinking what are the rich vegetables and fruits that are accessible to you? And I think that a lot of like culturally, I'm Puerto Rican, a lot of our food can be high in fat, high in red meat, but just exploring how can I create these different foods that we have culturally in our diet and how can we make it a little bit healthier? Maybe substituting certain, you know, cheeses or et cetera for like more fruits and vegetables in our diet. So I do recommend just exploring and getting creative, but not losing the culture that we have.
The old people they're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. They don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land.
time. All right. Ms. Gloria?
Yes.
Go right ahead with your question.
I have a question about the different types of breast cancer that women can get. I have three family members with three different kinds, one with DCIS, one with triple negative, one with something called HER2. Can you talk a little bit about the differences just to kind of educate us a little bit? Thanks.
Go right ahead.
Sure. I'll let you speak too. Were you going to say something?
No. I was just going to say those are great questions. That happens to be some genetic markers that we use to talk about these breast cancers in terms of their genetics to determine which ones might respond in different sorts of ways. And there are certain medications that are chemotherapy agents that are used. I would have that conversation with the person's treating your breast cancer in detail, because those are different ways that those things say different things about the cancer that you have, and whether or not certain markers or certain things are present in the cancer cells can make a difference in the way that it gets treated. And what you need to do is make sure you sit down with your breast cancer official, a doctor, usually an oncologist, and really have a good conversation about those, because those are absolutely excellent questions. If we have more time on today's show, we might be able to get into that just a bit more. But it talks about certain genetic markers that tell the doctor something about the nature of your cancer and give them some options about some of the different medications or chemotherapeutic agents that are used. But specifically for yourself, usually your oncologist is the person who will be the person that you need to have that very detailed conversation. And if you have someone that you could bring with you when you have that conversation, that would be great, because then you'd have another pair of ears to hear what's been said. And that's a wonderful question. And I think that what we could do, and I've had people on my show who from the University of Illinois Cancer Center that really talked about those things. But that's a conversation in and of itself. And I can, and maybe what we'll do with our next first Sunday is have somebody come on and talk more about those particular markers. It's a great, fantastic question. Thank you so much for asking. Want to go to the next caller, please? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Well, good morning, Dr. Mason, to you and your guests. I am so glad that you are on the air. You are educating us so well. And my question, Dr. Mason, this is Carmen from Elmwood Park. And my question, Dr. Mason, is not only with the mammogram, women with dense breast, should they also have the ultrasound as well? That's my question. I'll hang up so I can listen to your answer.
You want to go ahead and take that? Because I think that that's a function of your professional that you're seeing, but go right ahead.
Yes, so for women with dense breast, let's see, we have women coming in for their screening mammograms. If it's found that there was anything that they wanted to check on further, typically we are just getting women into the door to complete a diagnostic mammogram and ultrasound combined together. So our program can pay for all of those screenings for anyone who's uninsured or underinsured.
But I think her question was, how do you decide? And that's a question I think we'll have someone else from the cancer center. I know we talked about that before, but obviously women with very dense breasts, women that have had mammograms and there are some questionable areas or family history, a number of items go into making that decision. And so we have people that that's what they do, and we want to make sure that in the cancer center we could get them directed to those people who can best answer those questions, and we'll also have people back on the radio to talk about that. Did you want to make any comment about it? All right. Well, we got a couple callers calling in now, so let's go ahead and back to the phone. The caller, you're on the air with your question. Go right ahead. Hello?
Hello?
Yes,
hello?
You're on the air. Go right ahead. Yes, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Good morning, Dr. Mason, and to your guest as well. My question is there a higher incidence of breast cancer among those who take drugs, like former drug addicts or current?
I'm not aware of that data. Are you aware of any data?
I have not come across any data related directly to drug use, but once again, we can look into that and maybe share on a later date. But I haven't seen anything necessarily correlating the two.
Yeah, we can make a note, and because there's a number of people at the UIC Cancer Center, and I'm sure you'll take that information back. And let's sit down and figure out who we can bring on to answer those particular questions, because they're great questions and we don't want them to go unanswered. So perhaps maybe the next first Sunday of the month, we would be able to answer those questions and have someone again from the Cancer Center to answer those questions. Can you make we'll have a conversation about that and make sure that we get the appropriate professional to deal with that, because I don't know the answers myself, so I want to make sure I get the right answers for people. All right, we'll go ahead and take our next caller. I'm sorry, go ahead. Hello?
Yes, hello. I had breast cancer, and I went through surgery, chemo, and radiation, and after all of the treatment, I was informed that I have to take a medication for 5 years, and I'm wondering why.
Okay, well, the best question to ask that question to is the person who told you needed to take the medication, because not without knowing your all the details of your situation, I can't answer that question, and I'm not a breast cancer specialist. So, but we can get a specialist. So hopefully between Juana and Deidre, we'll get some people on maybe our next time that we get together, which will be the next first Sunday, to answer those questions, because they're very important questions. They may not be specific to you because we can't talk about your individual case, but we can talk about these cases in general. So we will make sure that we do that. Do we have any other callers? Yes, go right ahead.
I'm being told that it will prevent the cancer from coming back. And,
that's the goal, I'm sure, of any of the treatments. I can't talk about any of those particular treatments, but I would imagine that the goal of all of what they're trying to do is give you the best possible chance to move forward without recurrence in your breast cancer. But those are questions you really, really need to ask the people that are doing it and prescribing these things for you, because they're the best ones, because they got all your information, they know exactly what's going on. And if you don't understand what they're saying, you say, excuse me, I didn't understand what you said. Please tell me about this particular thing in a way that I can understand that it better. Because there's a lot of times
I have done that.
What did they say?
Now, I'm going to get off the phone because I know you have other callers, but I also want to know how to build up my strength.
How to build up your strength.
Yeah, after the cancer journey, I became weak.
Mm-hmm. And that's probably because of the impact of the chemotherapy agent. I think that we can get some dietitian people. And one, are there people that you, and then you take a note about, because I think that's a great question, and I have my own ideas, but you Can we get somebody out of the U of I Cancer Center in the dietary area to help with that?
I think as far as you, hello?
Go ahead.
Yes, if you also want to reach out to Equal Hope, so we have nurse navigators on staff that can attend appointments with you all if you wanted that, just to really brainstorm with the navigator what questions do you want to ask your doctor and what other types of, like, connections to a dietitian or connections to any other referrals that may be needed. The nurse navigator can assist and facilitate that process if you want that company.
Because a lot of times you're afraid, you're scared, you're hearing all this stuff, you're dealing with the cancer, and who knows what else is going on in your life. So we need to take time to explain these things, and we've got to work with folks to make sure that they get that kind of referral. So we want to make sure that we bring somebody on the radio who can talk specifically about those questions.
Yeah.
But as usually, I got to say, we're out of time. And these were great questions, great show. I want to thank you from the U of I Cancer Center for
Dr. Mason, I wanted to make one note. It's
real
possible.
Quick, because you're going to get cut off in a minute. Go ahead.
Yes, so Equal Hope has a restaurant tour that's going on for the entire month of October. We essentially are working with different restaurants throughout the city. Majority of these restaurants are in communities of color, our Black and Brown communities that are part of the tour. If you dine at these restaurants, they are donating a percentage of their earnings on that specific day for a mammogram screening, so someone who is uninsured can get screened. So if you look at restauranttour.com or want to call us for more information, we can tell you all about this upcoming
tour. That information, because we are out of time. What's the phone number?
Call us at 312-942-3368. That's 312-942-3368.
Well, I want to thank you for being on the show today. I want to thank all the listeners for being with us today. We really appreciate it. And that's the time we have for the Doctor in the House until next Sunday. And we want to make sure that you continue to tune in and to share it with a friend, because we're giving out great information. And until next week at the same time and station, may God continue to bless each and every one of you with continued health and strength as I leave you now in peace.